Hello, and welcome to One Stop Co-op Shop, your one stop for board game news and reviews. Hold on to your pants, it's time for a special episode. Hey, it's Peter, and I'm here with Jerry.
Hey, everybody.
Today, we are doing our top 20 list. That's right, our top 20 games of all time. And this is the One Stop Co-op Shop, but we are not talking cooperative games. We're talking about our top 20 all games of all time.
Absolutely.
So, Jerry, you've been playing anything fun lately?
Mostly, I've just been playing online Board Game Arena, primarily. Recently, I've been playing a couple of games of Lost Ruins of Arnak, which is a fun game. Which
it is a fun
may
game.
Or may not appear on my list.
Ooh, do online plays influence your love of a game, or does the fact that you're loving the game influence whether you play it online or not?
I think it's the former.
I don't even know what that means. I lost myself. I guess we should be thanking some Patreon supporters before we get going. Mike usually does this. So thank you. We do have a Patreon at patreon.com/onestop. If you want to help support us, it gets us, video cameras, things like that. So we can actually record this stuff, pay monthly fees for hosting and things like that. So this month, we're going to thank Gareth Thomas, Max Kreil, and Tom W. I know I got that last one right. The other two are up in the air. So Gareth, Max, and Tom, thank you so much for supporting us. And if you can't support us financially, then support us in whatever way you can. Thumbs up on videos are always great. Telling your friends about us, just sharing, join our Discord community. Whatever you can do to be part of our community would be awesome. We'd love to have you.
All right. So you ready to get started?
Well, so you're not going to say, hey, Peter, what games have you been playing lately?
What have you been playing lately? How about that?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about a game that you and I played together most recently, and that's Dune War for Arrakis, which is a two-player competitive game. It does have a solo mode. I haven't had a chance to try that yet. I talked about it a little bit on our last podcast, but yeah, it is a two-player game designed by some of the designers from War of the Ring, so it is definitely inspired by that, although I would say it is definitely a very different game at the same time. Kind of takes out some of the janky stuff I don't like and really focuses on the combat part. Now, you may remember better, and I know War of the Ring is probably your top game, so I don't want to spoil too much here.
I'm not commenting.
Yeah. But you may remember better than me, Battle of Five Armies. Like, how similar is that one to this? Because I compared it a lot to War of the Ring last week, but, you know, for those who played that one,
The only similarity with Battle for Five Armies that I see is really the deployment tokens for the Atreides faction in War for Arrakis. That seems inspired by the way deployment tokens worked in Battle for Five Armies, where the Free Peoples would reach into a bag and draw out a random token that would indicate what units are going to be deployed. So that's kind of the limit of the similarity. The combat's very different in Battle for Five Armies. The combat's much more similar to War of the Ring. But it looks like they took a little bit of that and put it into War for Arrakis.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I like about it is they still have the asymmetrical victory conditions, but it's very simplified. I mean, the one that's more familiar is the Harkonnen basically have to take over sieges or like towns owned by the Atreides player, while the Atreides player is looking to accomplish goals every round. So there are three new goal cards put up each round, and they're trying to accomplish these like mini objectives to move their influence with different factions on the planet up. So I don't know. I felt for me, it was a pretty pure simplification of it. Now, we did play a couple of rules wrong, but I mean, as you're going to get with these games that are a little more complicated, you're going to miss a thing or two your first time playing, but I really enjoyed it. That was my second time playing, and apparently I got the rules wrong both times, but that's okay. It was still fun.
Different rules, though, so, you know, you're learning.
Well, there you go. There you go. How about you?
I enjoyed that. That was a fun game. I mean, I got smoked, but I was the Atreides, and Peter was the Harkonnen, or Harkonnen, if you're a fan of the movies, the recent movies. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I do think of it, it's kind of like a simplified War of the Ring. But it had a lot of nice elements, and it played a lot faster than War of the Ring, which is a nice feature.
Cool. All right. So, like I said, we're going to go through our top 20, and then we'll probably have some honorable mentions at the end, because I can't go through this list and not mention my number 21. So I am looking forward to sharing that one at the end. I was super sad that it fell off my top 20.
Oh, and I probably should have moved honorable mentions at the beginning. I was going
to do that first.
Yeah.
Nah, because that way we'll see what didn't quite make the list. We'll get through the top 20 and then we'll, because I don't want to spoil like what might be on the list as well. So actually, I'm real happy through all the way through 23, 24. Yeah. No, I like all these games. All right. So never mind. Jerry, why don't you go first? What's your number 20?
Well, I just wanted to start off. For those that don't know me, I'm Jerry. I'm like the third person in Peter and Mike's primary play group outside of their families. So I play an awful lot of games with them. I don't really participate too much in the One Stop Co-op Shop channel, primarily because co-op games aren't really my favorite type of game, nor solo. But somebody on the Discord asked for me to participate in a top 20. So here I am to talk about my top 20 games. And the fact that we aren't limited to co-op and solo is a bonus for me. So
I'm kind of curious to see if you have more co-op games in your top 20 than I do.
I definitely have some co-op games in here. So
I'm actually surprised how few co-op games, but it's probably because I like play them. This is true with anything, but when you play something like five or six times in a row within a week or two to get ready for a review, I think you kind of need a break from it after you're done with that. Whereas when you could play stuff at your own pace, then it definitely makes you more excited to play it. And you know, leaves you wanting more. Whereas when you play it as quickly and as much as we do, I tend to be like, all right, I really like that game, but I'm not playing it again for a while.
All right, so I'll start with my number 20. And my 20 is probably going to be a surprise to you, Peter, but my number 20 is Heat, Pedal to the Metal. Yeah, I'm not generally a huge fan of racing games, but I really enjoy Heat. The card play, figuring out when to spend the heat from your engine, which cards to save from round to round. I think there's a lot of interesting decisions in it, and I enjoy it quite a bit. Although I will caveat with, I think it really needs to, you have to use the little expansion module that comes in the base game so that each car is unique and you draft the cards, the upgrades. I think the base game is lackluster in comparison.
Yes. Well, but that's true even for games like Thunder Road Vendetta, which I really like, but I prefer it when you have a little bit of customization. Yeah. Doesn't have to be a lot, but just a little bit's good. Heat did not make my top 35, but it probably would have had I thought about it. Yeah, it's probably what I don't think it would have made my top 20, but probably would have made my top 35. I do enjoy playing it. I think the limitations of number of players, like I don't know that I want to play it with two players. The Automa, the bot, whatever is fine, but
it's good, but I think it needs at least three or four.
Exactly. So, and not that that makes it a bad game and not that it means it shouldn't be on my top list, but typically we tend to play with three and I think I'd like it better with even four or five when playing it. So
yeah, it's certainly grown on me.
I do like it a lot, though. It's a game I would never say no to. That's for sure. My number 20 would probably surprise you, actually. I think it's going to be higher on your list, but it's Mansions of Madness. And
second edition.
Second edition. Yes, let's be clear on that. And interestingly enough, every time I talk about Journeys in Middle Earth, I say that it's a better game as far as like the card system and things like that. But my memories are all of Mansions of Madness. I think the story is probably better, and the fact that they're one-offs, I probably like better. I think as far as pure gameplay goes, I'd prefer to play Journeys in Middle Earth, but it's just harder to get to the table because of that campaign, and because it's, I don't think the stories are as good. I think every story that I've played for Mansions of Madness, whether I've been frustrated by the system or not, I've always remembered the stories and had fun with the stories. So I just think they do a really good job there of immersing you in the world. Now, I'm not usually a story gamer, but Mansions of Madness definitely gets me immersed every time I play.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I'd say Journeys in Middle Earth has better mechanics or mechanisms. It's a better game from that standpoint, but Mansions of Madness is just more fun.
Yeah, I agree. All right, number 19, Jerry.
All right, my number 19 is Keyflower, which is about as Euro as you can get.
Yeah.
as auction mechanisms, meeples galore. But I really enjoy it. I think it has a pretty unique approach to the auction. You know, you put meeples out and people can outbid you and then you get yours back, but then you have to immediately bid them on something else. And it's very interesting. And I always have a great time playing it, even though I always lose.
Am I the one that always wins then?
You or Mike usually beats me, but I think I played online once and got beat pretty bad. I just haven't played it enough, but I do enjoy it every time I play it.
Yeah, I mean, this would not make my top 35 that are on here. I'm looking at my bottom one. It wouldn't make it. I enjoyed my plays of it. I think it was fine. Maybe it would grow on me over time, but it did. The mechanisms intrigued me from what I remember, but because this is one that doesn't stand out, but just like the dryness of it just kills me on this one.
The theme is somewhat lacking, I think, but I still find it a lot of fun.
Yeah. So my number 19. Yeah. People may be surprised that it's this low, but I'm sticking with the co-op theme here. This is one-stop co-op shop. That's not why it just turned out this way. My number 19, and again, I think people will be surprised it's this low, is Oathsworn. This was one that I wasn't sure where it would make this list. It is one that I really enjoyed playing. It's probably one that if I had played it more and gotten it to the table more, would have risen in the rankings, but I just haven't played it since we reviewed it. My son painted everything up. I'm super excited to play it again, but it's just one that hasn't gotten to the table for whatever reason. And so because of that, it's this low on the list. And there's another game that's pretty low here that I think is going to surprise people too, for similar reasons. It's a game that just doesn't get to the table as much as I'd like it to.
Is it number 19 with you short-circuiting the narrative portion and going right to the...
You know, as much as I talk about that, I've never actually played it that way. And honestly, I've never made it past the fifth or sixth mission. So that's the other thing. Like, I don't know what comes later. I haven't gotten far enough into it. I enjoy the mechanics every time I played it. I've really enjoyed playing it. But just for whatever reason, doesn't make it to the table. Again, it might be the long campaign thing. It might be the once you get into it, I feel like you should keep playing it over and over so you don't forget how to play the mechanics. You don't forget the story. So it's one of those things with all these campaign games where I feel like it's you got to get it to the table and like let that momentum carry you through or, you know, probably not play it. And that's the problem with it right now is there's never a time where I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a month to focus on this game and just play that. And so because I haven't had that time to do it, look, when I retire, absolutely, this will probably be my number one game. But for now, in my current life situation, it is down here at 19. But I am looking forward
to it. Right now it's set up on in the well of my game table, but I have the topper on it. So,
well, there you go.
So it's sitting there waiting for me, I guess. So number 18. My number 18 is Descent Second Edition.
And really?
Yeah, actually, and it's Descent Second Edition with the co-op variant with the app, or there's also a print and play third part. You know, somebody came out with their own print and play expansion for it, which I've printed and played. I think it's a lot of fun. It scratches that fantasy dungeon crawl itch. I don't really particularly care for one versus many games, so the Descent First Edition, which was pure one versus many, and the base. Descent Second Edition without the app. They're okay. I enjoy them, but the co-op version with the app where it controls the monsters and there's a narrative and you're going through really for a fantasy dungeon crawl, I enjoy.
Yeah, no, that one didn't make my list either. I mean, again, I don't know if it would have made
that's
my
gonna
top
be a 35. Common theme here, I think.
yeah, no, I mean, it's one of those games that I really enjoyed it when I played it. And the app does make it super simple. And we talked about it, Mike and I, before, and I do think it's better than the Imperial Assault app because I think they just tried to go a level too far with the, hey, they come in and they do this and then they go back and then they move over here and there's 57 keywords that you have to know. So I do think Descent did a better job of simplifying it and keep you engaged in the story. And I remember enjoying it. I just haven't played it in a while. Again, there's so many new games all the time that one, I don't know. Didn't stick in my craw for whatever reason.
All right, so what's your number 18?
My number 18 used to be my number one game of all time, a game I've played by far more than any other game that I've ever played in my life, but I probably haven't played it in 10 years, which is Blood Bowl. So
you've played it more recently than that, haven't you?
I don't think so. Maybe I've played the digital version, like against the AI, but the AI is so bad that like, it's not fun playing against. I have played its younger brother, Blitz Bowl, more frequently. So if you don't know Blood Bowl.
You love that one.
You know, it grew on me. After I played it more, and I think the second edition or whatever of the Blitz Bowl, yeah. I said the Blitz Bowl like I'm 97 years old, of Blitz Bowl made it better.
I think it was called season 2 or something, but yeah.
Yeah, something like that. It balanced it out. So if you don't know Blood Bowl, it is a fantasy football game, but not the way you're thinking. It's fantasy being that it's fantasy races. It's made by Games Workshop, orcs, elves, whatever else, dwarves, undead. They have like a lizard man race, which is my favorite. And you're playing a game of basically rugby slash football where you got forward passing, but you're running the ball. Each team plays completely differently. They have skills. They level up through a campaign, through a season. And that is definitely the best way to play it. But I used to play this online before like online play was really a thing, through like a Java Blood Bowl server. And I played well over 1500 games of Blood Bowl this way. It is an amazing game with amazing tactics. Again, probably could be my number one game of all time, but for the fact that I just never play it anymore. And when I think about getting it to the table, and I thought about not including it at all, but you know, Mike and Jerry and I were talking about it, and it's like, well, I did buy stuff for Blood Bowl at the latest packs we were at, just at the end of last year. Like, I bought figures, I bought the new rule book, so I've got everything ready to play. Well, nothing's assembled, but I could be ready to play.
Anytime now.
Anytime. So it is a game that I would probably want to assemble and paint up, and maybe even just do a tournament at Gen Con one of these years or something.
So I didn't include any minis games or RPGs on my list. So and that kind of straddles the board game minis game line there. But I'm not a huge fan of Blood Bowl, so
no,
would have made my list anyways.
No, definitely not.
All right. So number 17 for me is ISS Vanguard, which I'm pretty sure is not on Peter's list.
No,
but this is the game that I wanted Unsettled to be. Unsettled has a very similar theme, space, and there's exploration elements. Unsettled, on the other hand, is a co-op puzzle game. It's almost a pure puzzle. Exploration is almost discouraged in that game, whereas ISS Vanguard is almost pure narrative, and the mechanics are, I hesitate to say lackluster, because they're fine. They work fine.
No, they're lackluster.
they work fine for the game, right? But really, the thing is exploring and making decisions and choosing what to go for. And that really, I enjoy that. So number 17 for me is ISS Vanguard.
Yeah, that one did not hit as well for me as it did for you, for sure. I'm just going to leave it at that. I find the lackluster mechanics disturbing. And the narrative I even had a hard time following as well. But I was so confused because it switches between like first person and third person. And like, I don't know. Yeah, that one did not sit as well for me as it did for you guys. My number 17, again, probably anyone who's been following the channel would think that this would be way higher, but it's a game that I haven't really played much since COVID. It was a game that I was playing all the time before COVID, and it's been replaced by a game that's not on my list because I'm not putting our own games on there, and that's KeyForge.
Really?
Yeah.
WoW Low?
Yeah, it's one of those games, I think, that the solo co-op expansion they came up with kind of ruined it for me, because it's so bad. And then when I talked to him about it I think it was Gen Con, and they're like, oh yeah, we just went with the first version of it rather than the second version of the solo, because the second one was confusing and we didn't understand it. I'm like, second one was actually decent. The first one was like broken. He just redid the same thing. Like, I don't know, just the attitude kind of made me mad. And like, now don't get me wrong, every set I've played has been better than the last. Like, this most recent set I played was excellent that they had kickstarted a couple years back. But I also don't have any burning desire to get it to the table or play it, even though I love it. If somebody said, let's play KeyForge, I would absolutely do it. If there was a tournament at Gen Con or whatever, especially a sealed deck tournament, absolutely, I'd open up new decks and play it. But it's not a game that I think I'm going to be requesting or bring to the table myself. And like I said, I like the KeyForge mechanics, and that's why I put them in Flame and Fang. And that game is just way more fun to me at this point. So by the way, still on GameFound right now. If you go there today.
late pledge on GameFound right now.
Late pledge it right
Link
now.
Link in the description below.
right. No, I do love what we did with that. And I love the system, obviously, but it's just a game I don't know when I'm going to play regularly again.
Okay. My number 16 is Return to Dark Tower, which is a Restoration Games remake of a very old game from the late 80s, I think, called Dark Tower. And it uses an app plus a large physical tower that you sit in the middle. The tower itself, I could take or leave. And actually, the tower kind of blocks view of part of the map. So it's
yes.
it, it, it has a few issues there, but the app itself I really enjoy, and I have a lot of fun with that game. Just the general play loop of moving around, and you can pretty much move wherever you need to move in a turn. You just might have to spend more resources, and you know, you go through dungeons, you fight monsters, you go on quests. For a build your own narrative type game, especially if you're playing with children, I'd say 10+. I have a blast playing it.
I mean, do you know you're going through dungeons? You literally are just going to a space on the board, right? You're not actually doing a space like
on the board, but the app has a dungeon in it, and you click through the different rooms of the dungeon and decide which way you're going. I mean, obviously it's random which way, you know, right or left,
yes.
but it does have, you know, things that happen to you in the dungeon.
I don't know that I've ever done a dungeon, so I don't even remember ever clicking left or right or whatever, because I don't know that I've ever played through a dungeon.
No, I don't think you have, but the games I've played, yes.
Yeah, most of the time I just go around like removing the threat from skulls. All the places on the yeah. board, the skulls. Yeah, that's my
probably
job.
The least interesting part of the game.
Yes, which is maybe why it's not as high on my list than it is on yours. Yeah, but I described this game as a fun romp, and Mike made fun of that, saying, oh, that's what I want to do is have a fun romp. I'm like, what's wrong with the fun romp?
yes.
Why? And then I actually think he might even like it better than me at this point. I don't dislike it, but yeah. So anyway. My number 16 is Clans of Caledonia. And this mixes a couple of things that I really like. And the solo is good too, by the way. It's not just the multiplayer. I do prefer it multiplayer, but the solo is pretty decent. It's pretty basic AI, but it just means you get to play through a game really fast and you don't have to worry about like what else is going on. But it's an economic game where you are like Scottish clans going around brewing beer, and you're putting different like plantations down on the board. You make wheat, I don't even remember all the resources you're making. There's but you have cows that you turn in that'll give you milk every turn, but you could also turn them into meat to fulfill contracts as well. You sheep that you could shear to get wool, but you again can also turn them into to meats. So yeah, no, it's just I love economic games as it is, but combining that with the Terra Mystica Gaia Project, like board placement thing where placing near people helps you, it'll let you buy things at a cheaper rate. And just the economics of it, the way you're counting money here and there, I don't know. It just, I love that kind of stuff where you're really trying to figure out the best way to maximize your resources, see what other people aren't doing so you can take advantage of like contracts or sell to a market that's really high value so you can get more money off of it and buy things that are cheaper. Like all those decisions really just make me happy. So yep, Clans of Caledonia, my number 16.
Yeah, I like Clans of Caledonia. It's a very good game. Didn't make my list, but it's enjoyable. It has a little bit of a Power Grid element to it. Not like you'd expect, but where whenever I play Power Grid, I always find myself counting my money and seeing, you know, do I have enough to do this? And Clans of Caledonia reminded me of that somewhat.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way.
Yeah. By the way, I just realized Power Grid's not on my list, and it's one of my favorite games.
I was about to say, I would have bet money that you had Power Grid on yours, but anyway.
Yeah, I do love Power Grid. It would be, well, we'll talk about it later. That'll be on my also.
That'll be an honorable mention.
That'll be, sorry, Mansions of Madness, or you're lucky, Mansions of Madness, that I forgot about Power Grid, because you definitely would not have been on this list.
Well, speaking of Mansions of Madness, my number 15 is Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition.
I thought you were going to say something stupid, like a sport or something.
No. No, number 15 is Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. We've already talked about it, but basically I really enjoy the narrative. It has some flaws, like the sudden ending sometimes where you don't really understand how much longer you have, which Journeys in Middle-earth tried to address, but I still really enjoy the narrative associated with Mansions of Madness and the whole mystery of going through. So that was my number 15, Mansions of Madness, 2nd Edition.
My number 15 is a game I don't know that you've played since it's been out in its full edition. You played it with us when it was on Kickstarter still, but I don't think you played the full edition, which is Tales from the Red Dragon Inn.
No, I've only played the Kickstarter intro.
Maybe. Yeah, the pre-release, and it's obviously gotten better since then as far as like just more stuff, and they've cleaned up, you know, the balance on it is really good, which is surprising, but I just like how cinematic it is. It reminds me of a game we're designing, Spare Parts, that like, just there's movement and moving the enemies is super important in the game, and getting them in range of yourself or moving them out of range or throwing them into traps, things like that. Like, I love cinematic combat, and it's so easy to play. It's a game where, you know, you're rolling dice for the enemy, but you see it at the beginning of the turn. You see what they're going to do on their activation. And the only surprise really is when you draw the tokens out of the bag, which isn't my favorite initiative system ever, but I think it works fine here because everybody's turns are so fast and so quick. But because of that, I do think it's better at lower player counts, solo or two players. I think there's probably the best way to play it. I think three players would be fine though. We haven't played it three players, obviously, but really just the narrative's good. It's short enough that it's not like take away from the gameplay, and I think the gameplay is just super fun and streamlined. So I really like this one, probably my favorite dungeon crawl, at least on this list, because I probably forgot about other ones. But this may be, no, it's not my highest cooperative game, but we're getting out of cooperative range now, which is interesting. Actually, yeah, I might only have one more. I'll have to figure that out. Oh no, never mind, I have another one.
I like Tales from the Red Dragon Inn, but I think when we played it, it was around the same time we played, I think, Agamonia, the preview, and Tidal Blades 2. And of those three, I enjoyed Tidal Blades 2 the best out of them. So, I mean, I'd be up for trying Tales from the Red Dragon Inn again, because I did have a good time with it. It is a fun game, but I'm really looking forward to Tidal Blades 2 coming out.
Yeah, Tidal Blades 2 is a lot of fun as well. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that one too. Now, we got less of a preview of Tidal Blades, though. We only played one mission. I don't even remember if we played... Well, no, we played the full first mission.
Yeah, we played the full first mission, yeah.
So I'm more hopeful for that one because I did enjoy what I was doing, but there's still a lot of gameplay yet to be seen. You know, how's the balance as you get further into the campaign? Yeah. Do they continue to be as interesting as it was in the first mission? So I have more hesitation with Tidal Blades 2, where Tales from the Red Dragon Inn, now that we played it, the full version, it's just amazing. It's just fantastic. So,
all right. So my number 14 is, I think it's my highest rated Eric Lang game, Chaos in the Old World, which I have not played in a long, long time, but is a really, really good game. It's difficult to play with new players because generally, because there's asymmetric winning conditions, and each one has to play to its strengths. Each faction needs to play to its strengths. It can be difficult to bring new players in and have them enjoy it as much as somebody who's already played it. But just the asymmetry of the factions and the different ways of gaining points and, you know, upgrading your faction, I really, really enjoyed it. So number 14 is Chaos in the Old World.
Yeah, I was thinking you were talking about Cthulhu Wars at first, but then I realized Chaos in the Old World was basically Blood Rage before Blood Rage was out. That's the one that it's like a 40K inspired game that's designed like
Warhammer Fantasy, but yeah.
Or Warhammer Fantasy, that's right. Yeah. So, no, I definitely enjoy that game. It is not my highest rated Eric Lang game, though. I have one coming up higher for sure, which I'm surprised is not higher on your list. But
well, maybe I just didn't realize that Eric Lang designed it.
That's true. That could be it as well.
I don't have Blood Rage higher. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, Eric Lang is hit or miss for me, I think. And I think he swings hard one direction or another with his design. So that one really hit for me. I do think I like Blood Rage better, but it's been a long time since I played Chaos in the Old World. So it'd be hard for me to compare those two.
I like Blood Rage too, but not as much as Chaos.
Yeah. So my number 14 is Spirit Island. This is a game that combines things I love, Euro games with cooperative games in a thinky, heavier game. The theme is amazing, where you're all playing individual spirits trying to save your island from the invaders. The biggest problem I have with this game is its complexity, and not the complexity in the base gameplay. I know how to play and I love playing, but I have a hard time increasing the difficulty, not because I don't want to or I'm afraid of losing, but because it just adds rule on top of rule. It's like little rule here, little rule there. Don't forget to do this when this happens. Don't forget to do that. Like, there's no easy way to increase difficulty without increasing complexity. So for me, that's the biggest negative. When you combine those two words, it's negative. It's the biggest negative with that game is the fact that I want it to be a little harder, but I have a hard time increasing that difficulty because I just don't want to add the complexity. And even in the app, Like, because you really need to know what those things that are coming up are. Because if you don't, you're just going to lose by a random surprise. So it bothers me that it's hard for me to keep track of everything I'm doing, plus what the AI is going to do or as you increase the difficulty. So as much as I love it and I love to play it, I always play it on pretty low difficulty levels just because I don't want to increase that complexity. So great game, though.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy Spirit Island, but ultimately it comes down a little bit too much on the puzzly side for me for a co-op game. I mean, I don't mind puzzle games. It's just I don't like them necessarily co-op.
Makes sense.
All right, so number 13 for me, which I'm sure is higher on your list, is Gaia Project, which
never heard of it.
I still think is the best of the Terra Mystica, Terra Nova, Gaia Project. What's the other one? Age of Innovation.
Seriously. We haven't played Age of Innovation, to be fair.
We haven't played that yet, but I've read the rules. I still think Gaia Project's with the theme and the way the technology tracks work is probably still the best from that series. So I'll let you speak to it because I'm sure it's higher on your list.
Doubt it. All right. My number 13, this might surprise you. Actually, my next two, I think you would not probably guess are on my list. My number 13, Underwater Cities.
Okay.
the look on your face, people on the podcast will not see that, but it was a little bit of shock there. Yeah, Underwater Cities is just a fun game. I love how you have these cards in your hand and you play them down to do any action. You have to play a card. And they're color coded based on like three different areas on the board. You want to do certain board actions that are in these different colored areas. But in order to trigger the card's special ability, you also have to play it in the same color or else you're just basically activating what's on the board. So it's a neat puzzle of like trying to get multiple actions by playing, you know, by saving and getting the right cards so you can play certain actions. And then it's worker placement, so people are blocking actions from you. I don't know. I just really enjoy the puzzle of it. I really like how you're expanding the board. I like things where you're building out and you see that building out. Certainly the 3D pieces help and like the board. And when you do stuff on your board, like it gives you other bonuses. It's like one of those games where the engine keeps feeding itself. It's like, oh, I built this place and now I get more food and I get more seaweed and I build little places off of that so I can get gold and I can do this and that. I don't know. It's just, again, it's an economic game. And I just love the way the economics of it work with like the five different resources or however many it is. I just love how it all kind of comes together and those tough choices. What do I do with these resources? Or, oh, I need this resource. I love games that let you figure out how do I get that one resource that I need or that one thing I need. Like I really need this to work. How do I get that one thing? And then this whole puzzle unlocks. And then you do five things based on just getting that one resource, even if you have to take like suboptimal actions. That's just delicious to me. And Underwater Cities does it really well.
So I like that game. That game's fine. As far as that feeling you were talking about, I think Arnak does that feeling much better than Underwater Cities does.
I might think so as well.
it's a good game. It's a good game. I don't think I'd ever find myself saying, hey, why don't you break out Underwater Cities? But if somebody asked me to play it, I'd certainly play it.
Jerry, can we play Underwater Cities?
Not right now, Peter.
Dang it. Video.
All right. So my number 12 is my only what I would consider a pure solo on the list, and that is Nemo's War, which I will admit I like almost purely because of the theme. It has an awful lot of randomness in it. Could win or lose based on dice rolls or, you know, draws of the ships that come out. But I'm a sucker for that theme, and it definitely lets you write your own narrative as far as dice game. And really, it's probably the only pure solo game that I'll ever actually seek out. I mean, there's some other games on this list that you can play solo, or I have played solo. And Nemo's War itself has a multiplayer variant, which...
No, it doesn't.
Spoiler alert, don't play that.
No.
Just don't do it.
That's the only way I've played it, so I have no...
Just don't do it. But Nemo's War is my number 12.
All right, Jerry. My number 12, again, you probably wouldn't think it's on my list. It is a train game, kind of.
Is that... I can't remember the name of it.
First Class.
Yeah, that's it. Yep. Okay. Yeah, it
does. First Class is one of those games that I don't think got a lot of love. It's definitely pretty abstract. It's a train game in, I don't want to say name only, because you're certainly doing trainy things, but there's no board. You're not building track on a board. You're building your own kind of route up at the top of your board. But the thing I love about it is it's basically a drafting game where the choices all are very impactful, but every little action is very simple and straightforward. It's like, do this and this, and you just draft a card from the middle. You have a limited choice. That choice matters too, though, because based on what row you draft from, once a certain number of cards are drafted, the rest of those cards in that row become unavailable for other people. So you're not only blocking by taking cards you want, but you're blocking by like removing cards from a row that just clears the rest of the row as well. I don't know. There's a lot of just small decisions. I guess I like games like this that are very tactical, where it's like, okay, these are my options. I can see them from the beginning of the round. I'm planning my way down and I'm just kind of working through these small micro actions. And if things go the wrong way, then okay, how do I change my plan? And how do I, again, it's kind of like Underwater Cities we just talked about. It's like, okay, how do I find that one thing that's going to unlock this thing I need to get by the end of the round? Or what's my next best option to kind of, I never feel stuck. I guess that's one of the themes for these games as well, is like, I always feel like there's a way out of it and you just have to find it, but they're also not overly thinky. Especially this one. It's just, again, all the actions are pretty straightforward. There's only like five or six different actions in the game, but all the decisions for me are at least very interesting. And then they have modules too, which can vary the game up from game to game. I don't think all the modules are great, but you know, there's definitely some variability in there, but you just pick the ones you like and you just play with those. And, you know, there's enough of them that are good that you can vary it from game to game.
Yeah, it's a good game. I mean, it doesn't sniff my top 50, but it's a good game. I'd play it.
Get out of here.
All right. So my number 11 is Barrage, which when you hear it, the first time I saw Barrage was, I think Peter and I were wandering around Gen Con.
Yep.
And we got a woman who didn't speak English very well. She was Italian and tried to explain the prototype of Barrage to us. And we were like, yeah, sure. It's a game about building dams and water flowing. It sounds riveting. but then when it actually came out and we played it, or I played it at least, I thought it was great. I mean, it is, for a game about building dams and dealing with the flow of water and generating power, it is cutthroat.
Yes, I was about to say, it's one of the nastiest games we've ever played.
It is a nasty game, but I really, really enjoy it. It's a great pure Euro game. It has some interesting mechanisms as far as rotating resources to have them come back. I find the different expansions you can add, or at least the variable player powers you can add, to be very interesting. You can combine, like, there's two different types of player powers that you combine to form your faction. And I just generally think it's an awful lot of fun. So number 11 is Barrage.
Jerry likes it because he just smacks everybody every time he plays it. I don't think he's ever lost that game. And I don't think anybody's come within 50 to 75 points of you in that game.
You beat me last time.
Oh, is it like trivia then? We're never going to play again? Is that what's going on?
That's up to you. That's up to you, sir. Last game I played online, though, I did win by like 100 points.
Yeah, no, it's one of those games, and everybody's got these games. And I think Blood Bowl is one of these for me, which is probably why you hate Blood Bowl, because like we played it pretty early on and just everything clicked and everything kind of made sense for me and like just worked with the way my brain does. That's the way Barrage is for you. So while I like the game, it definitely was not in my top 20. All right, my number 11 is the best dudes on a map, battling, war game, espionage, flying around in the future. It's Star Wars Rebellion.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. I love this game. I know we talked about Dune War for Arrakis earlier. I think that one's fun. I know we talked about War of the Ring. I think that one's fun. For me, this is the best game. It's not the same genre, but it's similar, where you have asymmetric things going on. The goals are different for each side. I really enjoy, I don't know what it is, because every time I think about playing it, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so big and so grandiose and so much going on. But then when I actually play it, I'm like, oh, this is really straightforward. Like basically you're playing actions from your hand or you're moving around the board and that's it. So I just love the decision making. I love the choices. I love how it feels like the best part of Star Wars for me. Certainly the miniatures don't hurt because they're very cool. Like these tiny little miniatures of like all the ships you'd want to have in there. They just bring you to that Star Wars-y place. So for me, it is, it's my favorite dudes on a map game. It's Star Wars Rebellion.
Yeah, I like Star Wars Rebellion. Matter of fact, I have the blinged up copy with all the little ship stands that you know, have the ships flying up off the board and stuff. Yeah.
You mean I have the blinged up copy?
Well, yeah, it's at your house.
It hasn't left my house in 5 years, I don't think.
All right. So my number 10 is Raw, which is oldie but goodie. It's an auction game with some twists in there, but I think Mike talked about it in his, you know, numbers 20 to 40. But it's designed by Reiner Knizia many, many, many years ago, probably in the 90s, right? And we played a couple tournaments of it way back in the day, I think. It's a lot of fun. It's easy to get into. It's easy to teach. And
the scoring's a little convoluted. That's the hardest part about it. But the gameplay is so fun.
Yeah, and it's played in like three epochs. And I think after the first epoch, people really understand. Like after you've scored the first epoch, they understand what's going on. So you may have to restart after one, but it's not like it takes a long time or anything. But it's definitely an auction game. But it has some additional twists to it that make it really interesting. So my number 10 is Raw.
Well, the interesting part for me is that you have the limited number of bids in the entire game, right? For most games, it's going to be 3 bids. In lower player count games, you get 4 bids. But you basically have a number printed, and everybody has a unique number, number 1 to whatever, 16, or I think it goes higher than that even. And so basically, you're just playing this tile, and you say, I bid my 15 tile. And then only the 16 tile could beat you or whatever else. Or I'm playing my 2 tile and somebody else has to decide, is this worth playing a higher number tile or not? Because you're not only bidding on the lot of tiles that are in the middle, but you're also bidding on a bidding tile for the next round of the game. So yeah, it's got such cool, clever mechanisms. This one's down at 24 for me, but I do think, and I'm not a fan of auction games. I'm not a fan of bidding games in general. But because of the way the bidding in this one works, this one and I think Vegas Showdown are probably two of the only bidding games that I really like. But yeah, no, it's so streamlined, so straightforward. Yeah, Raw's a really good one.
Yeah, I generally find auction games to be pretty fragile. Like yes. People are new players, they don't understand the relative value of things. They can't play the game well. Like they don't know what to bid for various things. And I think Raw helps alleviate that a bit. Because it's not a bidding monetary value, it's bidding a value of a tile.
Yeah, I just realized I didn't have For Sale on here. That's another bidding auction game that I really like. But I don't know that it would have made the top 20 anyway. But yeah, I really like that one as well. It probably would have been right around the same spot as Raw for me. All right, so my number 10 is a game we play, probably the game I played with you and Mike more than any other game. And that is The Crew Mission Deep Sea. Now I put Mission Deep Sea, but any version of The Crew works. Like I like the original one as well. I know some people are like, oh, Mission Deep Sea is way better and I would never play the original one. I don't feel that way at all. I actually like the original one for certain situations, certain groups, and just depending on my mood. I think Deep Sea can be a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I just want to play regular Crew. It's like, all right, you need to get these 4 cards. Straightforward, simple. So for those of you who haven't played or don't know about it, it's a trick-taking game. It's really the first one that became famous for trick-taking cooperative games. There's certainly other ones now. A lot of them are two-player, but The Crew just does it real well. Trick-taking is a mechanism I really enjoy, and this has all the aspects of it. And just, yeah, I mean, for 3 or 4 players, I wouldn't play it at 2. I think there are better ones, like the Scotland Yard one, is better as a 2-player trick taker, but most of the time when we're playing, we have at least 3. So yeah, The Crew Mission Deep Sea or regular The Crew is awesome. One of my favorite games. It's my number 10.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, we've played through both versions of it all the way through.
That'll tell you something.
So yeah. It's a very good game. Didn't make my list, but it's a very good game.
Really? Oh, I thought that was going to be a 3-way crossover for sure.
No.
Wow.
I'm kind of crewed out by at this point.
You say that, but then we play it and you have fun every time. Like, I feel like it's that kind of game.
Sure.
All right. That was my only one I thought that we would all three have on our list. Nope.
Sorry.
Now I hold out no hope.
All right. Number 9 is Oathsworn. Like I mentioned before, it's still set up on my table. I mean, it's under the topper, but it's still set up. I really like the combination of the narrative plus the battle. The encounter has interesting choices to make in it and interesting mechanisms in it. And the narrative is something I just generally enjoy. If I had one negative to say, I wish the narrative was more impactful than it is. As it stands, at least as far as I've played, it seems to result mostly in, you know, you get an extra token or you get a different token or something like that. I have seen it where I've gotten different allies, but the allies haven't really done anything yet. So I haven't finished it. So maybe it gets more interesting later on. But overall, I really enjoy the gameplay of it. So my number nine is Oathsworn.
All right. So my number nine is a game I have played more digitally than I have played in real life. But it is a game you and I have played quite a bit of back in the day.
I know.
What is it?
Through the Ages?
It is Through the Ages.
Ha ha.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah. The solo mode on the app is amazing. Like, have you tried that out? Like the challenges and stuff?
I did like years ago.
Yeah. Oh, I still play it all the time. Like that's one that I keep going back to over and over. Through the Ages is a great game. I think Nations is probably one that if I'm getting it to the table, it really copied a lot of the, so Through the Ages is a civilization game designed by Vladislav Schwadl. And it was one of his first games that I feel like we played. I mean, that and Galaxy Trucker, I guess, were some of the earlier ones. But just a really good Civ game. Doesn't have a map. Every player's got their own boards. And I guess that's the way First Class is. So maybe I like that, where a lot of things are just, you're doing stuff in front of you. You don't have to necessarily worry as much about what other people are doing. It distills civilization into what I want, which is upgrading, feeling stronger, feeling better as the game goes on, making tough decisions, what to do with my resources. I mean, I do feel like in a lot of ways it is an economic game. It's just, I have these two different resources. What am I going to spend them on? Well, I guess three with research, with science. But, you know, what am I going to spend them on? And how am I going to figure out this puzzle? And, you know, I got to look at what the other people are doing to some degree. But really, I'm focusing on my own engine as much as possible. Well, they got that military threat out there just like looming over you, where your first couple of games, if you don't pay attention to military, people are going to crush you probably. So that's
start.
Yeah, that's maybe the one negative of the game, but I don't know, just really good. Again, many decisions. Now, Nations, I like the way Nations work better in the fact that you're doing micro turns where, like, again, while you're playing it live, I do one action, you do one action, next person, back, and going around the table. The way it works in Through the Ages is you basically have five little mini actions and you just do all of them back to back, which means that some players' turns can take a little longer. So that's why I think it's better for either asynchronous play or playing against the AI or against the computer. But I mean, the design is so good. I'd still play it any day, even with the negatives of having to wait around for your turn to come around. Like, it's just a really well-designed game. And I do think it's better than Nations overall. I just think the thing I like about Nations better is just the quick turns. And so both of them, I mean, this is kind of a spot that both of them could fit in. My number nine, though, I'm going to stick with Through the Ages.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy Nations. And originally, I thought I might like Nations more when we first started playing Nations, because it did fix that whole downtime issue to a large degree. But spoiler alert, Through the Ages might appear somewhere on this list.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
I'll defer to talk till then, talk about it.
Yep.
So my number eight is one that you already mentioned, Star Wars Rebellion.
Okay.
Again, it's a sprawling narrative game, but the actions that you do and the fact that you can follow essentially the original trilogy of the movie with the various cards that you play and the plans that you try to execute really make for an enjoyable game for me. Two knocks against it. One is the, I think the expansion that came out for it fixed a bunch of things, especially combat. But I think it made the Empire a little bit too weak as far as combat's concerned. It seemed like it was too easy for the Rebels to beat the Empire militarily on particular attacks. So that I found a little disappointing. And the other thing is that it takes a long time to play. Like, it's not quick to set up. It's not quick to play. So you really have to set aside, I'd say, at least 3 hours to play a game of that. At least, you know, a physical copy. I don't know about online.
I think that's true for all these type games, right? Like War of the Rings, a long game as well. I think.
True.
I think the new Dune War for Arrakis. I mean, those three games I'm comparing to each other because they do feel similar to me. Not the same for sure. None of them work the same, but they're the same sprawling epic feel to me and two player head to head. So yeah, I mean, I think
don't get me wrong, I mean, it's my number eight, so
yeah.
I still really like Star Wars Rebellion. It just, you know, as a negative, it does take a long time to set up and a long time to play.
And you said narrative game. I never thought of it as a narrative game. I guess you get emergent narrative from like what's going on. If you know the planets and you know the universe, things like that, but it's not telling you a story. It's not like ISS Vanguard where you're reading like pages of narrative text.
True. It is definitely an emergent narrative, but the card play in it is, you know, you can point to where that, hey, that happened in the movie, you know, which I enjoy at some level.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be fan service, but that's all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's good fan service. So. Yeah, exactly. All right. My number eight is Castles of Burgundy. And
that low? Wow.
Yeah. Well, there's some good games up here. Like, there's some really good games. You're going to be surprised at one of my top three, actually, that it's that high.
You're not going to be surprised at any of my top three.
No, probably not. Although the fan, everybody else will be because they don't know you as well.
That's
as
true. That's true.
But yeah, no, Castles of Burgundy, one of my favorite games of all time. Definitely my favorite Stefan Feld game. It's a Euro game where you're basically placing hexagonal tiles around to form patterns. I mean, it's been on Kickstarter recently. I don't have the new fancy edition with like miniatures because I don't see why you would want that. Like, it just seems like
printing it. You sure?
Yeah, no, it seems like extra work to me. Honestly, I don't mind even the original edition, like that people said was so ugly. I bought it for like $20, which is great. Yeah, no, not like the several hundred dollars for the versions you have to pay nowadays.
But you want the chunky tiles with the plastic tiles for the boards?
I don't really care that much, I guess. It's really all about drafting your own dice or deciding what to do with your own dice. You roll two dice a turn and you're basically doing two actions. The actions are really simple. You're either pulling a tile from the middle. So if you rolled a five, you can pull from any of the buildings that are in that five area, putting it on your like reserve area, or you're taking it from your reserve area and putting it on the board. Every space on the board has a color that matches one of the building colors. There are different types of buildings, like five or six different types of buildings, and then has a number on it. So you're placing that tile on that number. So you're either pulling a tile down to your reserve, taking it from your reserve, putting it on your board, or you are selling your goods. And that's basically it. Like, those are it for your actions. Or you can get like workers, which help you manipulate your dice results later on. But that's really it. But you build this engine as it goes along. And it's just so satisfying filling up your board and going, oh, I need this and this. And most of the time I care what the tile is, especially early in the game. But later in the game, I'm like, I just need a yellow tile. Any yellow tile will do. I just need to fill in this space. Because as you fill in areas, you score points for that as well. So I just love the decisions between like what to do. It seems so simple. Like, you just have these dice results and, you know, you can do, you know, only a couple different options and your choices are limited. But I think I like that, it keeps coming back over and over. Really simple, really quick actions where your choices are very limited, but you have to do the best with what you're given.
And it's quick to play.
Setup is the hardest part. Like, set up at the beginning and then set up between rounds takes a little bit of time, but no, it's fairly quick otherwise.
Yeah. I enjoy it. Didn't make my top 20, but it's a very good game. I considered it. So I guess that means Heat beat it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah. All right. So my number seven is Great Western Trail, specifically the New Zealand, the latest one that came out. I like Great Western Trail. I like the original. I have not played Argentina. But I like New Zealand better because I think it leans into the deck building a little bit more, which I really enjoyed. So Great Western Trail, it's definitely a Euro game. Theme is somewhat thin, but it has a glorified rondel mechanism where you're moving along a board and you pick your action. You get to move one to four spaces or whatever and choose which action you want to take. And it's a mixture of building out your own personal path and taking the most efficient actions possible. And there's various paths to victory and they all seem relatively viable, especially for different skill levels. And I just think the New Zealand edition that just came out just came out like, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, had some new twists and it really leans into the deck building. So that's my number seven, Great Western Trail, New Zealand.
So Oathsworn is now off my list. I totally forgot about Great, and I didn't forget. I actually wrote it down. I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta add Great Western Trail to my list, and I totally spaced on doing it. So yeah, no, it's not on this list. Yeah, Oathsworn now off. So that won't be a three-way crossover. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I forgot Great Western Trail. Well, I didn't forget. Like, I remembered afterward. I'm like, oh, I got to add that to my list. And then I just realized I'm looking through. I'm like, oh yeah, no, it's not coming up at all. So oh, it should be.
That's not a crossover. Mike didn't have it in his top 20. He had it in his Oathsworn? 20. Oathsworn? Oh, he might. Yeah. I don't know about Oathsworn. I was up for Great Western Trail.
No. I meant Oathsworn's no longer going to be a crossover because that one's now, see ya, Oathsworn, out of my top 20. gosh. Yeah, no, this would probably be number 3 if I'm looking at my list right now. Yeah, I can't believe I forgot to put it in. That's okay, because my number 7, quote unquote 7, is Ark Nova. So this is a game, I thought about Terraforming Mars. I thought about Terraforming Mars Ares Expedition. I thought about Earth. Of these card building games where you've got a board and you're doing stuff and like trying to build this engine through cards, that one sticks out to me. Ark Nova stands out probably because of the slide system you have on the middle. So if you don't know, it's about building a zoo, because Ark Nova does not tell you in the title that that is about building a zoo, but you're building a zoo where you are. I wouldn't buy it for the solo mode. That is one thing I'd say. The solo mode is pretty terrible, actually, but it is a good way to learn the game. But even the timing of it, it's not similar at all to the timing of the real game. But I just love the, again, interesting decisions that you have with minimal choices, because you're basically just, you have money and you're going to spend your money. So you're going to play the cards in your hand. Usually you might try to get cards off the board, but you also have this interesting like set of 5 cards in front of you where as you use a card, it goes down to the least useful spot. And then it pushes everything else up. So you have 5 different actions, but those actions become more and less powerful as you're playing, and it's going to wax and wane too. So like as you play a card, it's going to become less powerful and you probably won't play it again as your next action. So that system, which was I first saw that in Civ, A New Dawn, but it's really excellently implemented here. And again, it's got that delicious economic part of the game to me, and then the board building where you're kind of puzzling pieces out. So just all of it all together really fits together well. Love that one. So that is
all right, I'll reserve my comments for Ark Nova. All right, my number 6 is Brass Birmingham. I always enjoyed Brass, the original. I kickstarted the Brass Birmingham, and I think it's better. I think the addition of the beer is interesting. I always have a blast when I'm playing it. It's always a bit of a brain burner, and it seems like every time I'm playing it, I'm doing something that I feel is appreciably different than the previous plays I've done. I mean, it's the same board, but different things are blocked off, and I try to go for different types of buildings. But Brass Birmingham just is a really, really enjoyable Martin Wallace Euro game.
Yep. I have comments on that one later, but not why you think. So for now, I will leave that where it is. My number 6 game is one of my favorite types of games, and it kind of goes back to Blood Bowl a little bit as far as my love of tactical combat games. And this one is tactical combat that plays in like 30 minutes, and you don't have to paint miniatures or do anything else. You got it?
Summoner Wars?
Summoner Wars. I love Summoner Wars. And I think the reason you hate it is, again, it's one of those games I was just naturally really good at from like day one, and like all the tactical hiding units behind other units, hiding behind walls. It doesn't hurt that sometimes you just roll really well too, and for whatever reason I tend to roll really well in that game. I don't know if it's that, or you know, you always forget about the times you fail. You always well, it might be the opposite. You may only remember the times you fail, but it's like it always feels like you have the worst of the luck. But for whatever reason, in Summer Wars, even when I have bad luck, I seem to be able to overcome it. So I just love how many factions there are in that game, how well balanced they are, relatively well balanced. I think some factions are definitely better than others, and some matchups are better for certain factions as well. But the second edition has made the game even better. I own so much of the first edition that I don't own the second edition, but Mike has it. So I'll happily play that one anytime. And certainly you can play it online as well. So I've done a little bit of that. They have like a campaign, a solo campaign you can go through online just for free on Summoner Wars website. So it's really good though. Summoner Wars, 30 cards, every faction plays different, tactical, just, you know, yumminess. The whole point is just kill the other person's king, basically. But yep, a lot of fun.
It's a game.
Oh, boo.
All right. So my number five is Anachrony. So I tend to like the Mindclash game series. I think they have a Dracarian. I think that's right here. Dracarian.
Yep. Anachrony's like over here too, next to me, by the way. Anachrony's next to me.
Oh, I know. There. Yeah, you got my copy of it.
So I do have your copy of it. I did not realize you liked it that much.
Oh, I think Anachrony is probably their best.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Part of it's the theme, like the whole time travel and a bit of sci-fi thrown in there. I think they took mechanisms that exist in other games, like essentially loans, and put such an interesting twist on them. They almost feel like they're brand new mechanisms.
Yep.
I just really enjoy the gameplay of Anachrony. It's meaty. It's a nice Euro, but it has a great theme to it that I think they did an excellent job adapting to a, you know, Euro style game. So that's my number five, Anachrony.
We'll have to play that next time you're over, because I haven't played that in forever. And I like that one too. Didn't make my top 20, but yeah, no, but I really enjoy that one. Sorry. I'm trying to write down yours as I'm going along as well. So my number five is Eric Lang's best game. And you might've forgot it's an Eric Lang game, but yes, Cthulhu Death May Die.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's so not fun. I think they did a really good job of combining two different things. So you have a different boss and you have a different mission, and you just shuffle these decks together and it creates a different story each time you're playing. Now, if you're dumb like me, you might combine the same two things back to back times when you're playing because you forgot that's exactly what you played with last time. But I don't know. It's just a neat way of doing it, and it's just fun, like the insanity mechanic, where as you become more insane, you become more powerful, you're rolling more dice, but you're also closer to losing the game. You know, a lot of games, and we're guilty of this too when we design our games, as you get hurt more and more, you become weaker and weaker as the game goes on. But I really like the feeling of leveling up as you're getting weaker, and so it's really an interesting decision. Sometimes you choose to take sanity loss, which puts you closer to losing, but also makes you more powerful in different ways. So I just love the way it plays. It's pretty straightforward, pretty simple, but you can do cool things like run through the building, grabbing every monster and like just running them away from everybody. So it's just, it's got a fun tactical puzzle nature to it as well. So I don't know. For me, it's one of those games that's way more fun than it deserves to be when it comes to looking at the mechanics. It's just so much fun to play. So that for me is Cthulhu Death May Die.
Yeah, I really like that game. Didn't make my top 20, but I really do enjoy that one. The only thing that bugs me a little bit about it is the fact that you shuffle the boss and the mission together to form the particular scenario means that the boss is, you know, by its very nature disconnected from the actual mission.
Sure.
Like it means any boss could be plugged into there. And that kind of hurts the narrative a little bit in my mind anyway.
Okay.
I think the game itself is very, very good.
Which is funny because that's one of my favorite things it does is because it lets you combine any boss. But I don't know, because you pull out the narrative cards for the boss and you pull out the narrative cards for the story. So they kind of intertwine a little bit. I mean, don't get me wrong. None of them are narrative. Sure. But. Yeah. But I mean, and I will say there are bad missions, like that one with the ballroom or whatever was really annoying. We had to go talk to all the people, find the right person and walk them out. I feel like every game is going to have
those. Yeah, you're going to have a mission bad there, right?
But for the most part, I've enjoyed every time I've played it.
All right. So my number four is one that Peter already talked about, and that is Ark Nova. For all the reasons Peter has already talked about, I think Ark Nova is great. It's one of those games where you have to plan a few moves ahead, but no more than a few moves ahead. You always have to be ready and willing to sort of shift based on what cards are popping up or what your opponents are doing. I have a blast playing it. I've played it a ton of times on Board Game Arena, mostly with people from the Discord, asynchronous. But it's a great game. I enjoy it. I really want to play the expansion at some point.
We didn't play it? I thought we played it once.
We started playing it at PAX Unplugged with Steve, but we ran out of time.
Yeah,
because the expansion looks like it adds a bunch of cool things to it. Especially,
I mean, it doesn't add that variable. Much, though.
It's not adding a lot of complexity, I think, but adding the variable player powers.
Yeah,
seems kind of interesting to me.
Especially
since you draft them.
Yeah, that's another one we could play soon because I really enjoy that one as well.
So, yep, Ark Nova is my number four.
All right, so this one I'm going to guess is going to be our highest crossover game. because you haven't mentioned it yet, and you said you liked it better than the game we talked about earlier, and that is the Lost Ruins of Arnak. So since we haven't heard it on your list yet, I'm guessing it's a little bit higher even than Ark Nova. It's just a fun Euro, like you're going out exploring, you find new places, which basically give you more options for places to place your workers later to get more resources. But it's that game of getting a little bit more resources. And I just need to figure out how to get one gem. I can go over here, but there's a monster there. How do I take care of the monster? Or do I explore new places? Like, there's just so much going on for such a simple, straightforward game. And now that they have individual characters, like where everybody has their own special powers and feels very different in the way they play, I don't know. It's just fun every time. And it's that goodness of like that slot machine or that jackpot. You put a quarter in and like, what's coming out? Oh, I'm getting all this good stuff coming out. And I go to this place and I get all this cool stuff. And I need this stuff to go over here, which gives me other cool stuff that I can use now to come over here and do this other thing. And it's just a great combination of just figuring out that one next thing you need and how do I do that next little step. And I really do like how different all the characters feel, and the deck building is pretty neat in it too. It really adds to that feel as well. It's like, okay, I'm gonna add these cards to my deck, which means I'm probably gonna explore more this game, or I'm gonna focus on this more this game. And the solo adventures are really good. I have never finished one of those campaigns, but I played two or three of them, and it's a lot of fun to play. So one of these days, I'm going to sit down and make it through an entire solo campaign of it, which is only like five games. But yeah, no, I enjoy playing it every time I do.
Yeah, I haven't played the solo campaign, and I think I only played the expansion with the variable player powers once. But yeah, no, it's a great game.
All right, you're number three.
My number three is Le Havre. So an oldie but goodie from Uwe Rosenberg. It's one of the first Euros I really, really, really enjoyed. I had played Agricola. I had a lot of fun with that. But then this one came out, and it was I found it so much more fun than Agricola. It didn't quite have the oppressive feel of Agricola to it. It has enough variation from game to game and enough randomness in the order the cards come out or the order the resources appear that it keeps it interesting from game to game to me. And for some reason, the whole concept of how it works just appeals to me. So buying the buildings, moving your person around, when you abandon a building to move to another building and therefore open it up to another player to use, all of it's very, very, very interesting to me. So that's my number three, Le Havre.
Yeah, that one's my number 23, which I guess it means it's really my number 25 if I had Power Grid and Great Western Trail on here. But yeah, my number three is the newest game on the list. You got to guess this one just based on that. My number two and one are going to be pretty standard. Everybody's going to guess it. But first time we played it was PAX last year. That's how new.
You mean 2023 PAX?
Yeah, 2023.
Oh, Nucleum.
Nucleum. I love that game. Oh my gosh. It's so good. And the solo is good, except for the fact that it's unbeatable, I think. Like, either I'm playing it completely wrong or it's unbeatable, but I still enjoy what I'm doing when I'm playing it solo. I haven't played this game nearly as much as I want to, but that is my brass killer, quote unquote brass killer. There's a lot of similarities between the two games, but again, it has that thing where you get these tiles and the tiles have two simple actions on them, and you could play them either on the board or you play them in front of yourself, and that determines how your economy grows from round to round. I love that there are five actions in the game and every tile's got two of them on it. And it's like, what tiles do you draft? Where do you play them? What do you do with them? Do you use them to complete rails on the board, which help extend your network, or do you play them in front of you? To me, it's less convoluted than brass while still giving me a lot of the same good feelings. And there's not really a lot negative I can say about Nucleum, obviously, when it's this high on my list. I'm sure I'll find something as I play it more, but I've really enjoyed every single game I've played of it. So I was surprised myself, but I was like, yeah, I'd rather play Nucleum than every other game on this list beside my top two.
And I had to talk you into trying that.
You did. You did. And another good one that as another recent one that's good is Carnegie. You know, I didn't add that to this list. I almost forgot about it, but I fought you real hard on that one. And that one's really good as well. That one.
Yeah.
Could make this list in the coming years if I play it more.
I would agree on both those. Neither one of them made my list, but both of them have the potential to do it. Nucleum, like you said, it's really fun. It does have scratch a similar itch to Brass Birmingham, but it has some different elements to it that I really enjoy. The thing that brings Nucleum down for me is the board is so ugly. It is hideous. I understand they're trying to make the colors very obvious so you can see, but it makes the board look like somebody just puked on it. It's horrible.
Yeah. I don't even notice that.
See, every time I think about getting it out, I'm like, man, it's so ugly.
Well, every time you think about getting out, you're like, oh yeah, it's still at Peter's house.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. Yeah. There's that. Yeah. All right. So in my number two, you already spoke about this one, but it's Through the Ages. I remember we played Through the Ages quite a few times, and then we played it four player and we decided that was enough Through the Ages for a while. And Nations came out, and we, you know, fell in love with Nations because it had the micro action, got rid of the downtime. We were all excited about that. But then the new edition of Through the Ages with some of the revised balance changes and some new cards in it came out. And I decided I like that better than Nations. Through the Ages is just a better game.
It is.
No offense to Nations. Nations had took the Through the Ages formula and brought in some interesting ideas that fixed some problems, but introduced new ones that I don't think were quite as good. I mostly play Through the Ages asynchronous now. I think that's the best way to play, simply yep. because you don't have to worry about the downtime then. It's still not great four player, I don't think. I think it's really a three player or two player game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. It's great. Everyone should play it if they have 1 to 2 months to play an asynchronous game.
Or just get the app. How fast your play. Like, the AI is so good on the app that I think it's worth buying just to play that way. Like, honestly, I don't mind playing against the app.
I have played the app in the past, and the app is well made. It is very good. The AI is decent. The presentation of the app is very, very good. I just like playing against live people.
Yeah, but and even the challenges, like it twists the rules in just a little enough way that makes you think differently to play it. So I enjoy just playing through the challenges and stuff. And you have challenges for the base game, the expansion, and then the two of them combined. So there's plenty of challenges out there that will keep you busy for a very, very, very long yep. time. So and I'm still terrible at the game, by the way. Like same with Nucleum. I don't know that I've ever won Nucleum, but you know, some of these games that I really love, I just don't win, and that's okay too. My number two, to nobody's surprise, although I could see this one falling because I really don't play it anymore, even though I used to play it every Friday night live on the stream, is Marvel Champions. To me, still the best living card game. I really enjoyed playing it, but it's gotten to the point now where it's just so much stuff that like the thought of bringing it out, building a deck, doing all that stuff. I know for certain people, that's like the appeal and the draw. For me, it's getting to the point where it's like, all right, enough's enough. Like I'm good. I'm good with where I'm at. Certainly they're going to keep releasing stuff and I don't blame them for it. But like, if I never got any more Marvel Champions stuff, I'd be so happy with what I have. It's a great game. It's honestly probably solo. It is certainly my favorite solo game. Well, I don't even know if that's true, but it is a quick solo game. Like if I'm pulling out a solo game to play something in 30 minutes, Marvel Champions will come out every time. I think it's probably best at two players, but solo is a really good way to play it as well. So really fun, can be fast at low player counts. And you really feel like, you know, one of the cool superheroes, and you do feel like you're doing really cool, powerful things. So that's my number two, Marvel Champions.
Let's just say I didn't enjoy Marvel Champions quite as much as you did. I never felt like a superhero playing with it. And actually, I think the Shut Up and Sit Down review of Marvel Champions really spoke to me as far as what they were saying. It's really, it's just, it seems like you don't listen to what somebody else is doing on their turn. You just tell them to count up the numbers and tell you what the number was at the end of how much damage they did. That's what it felt like to me. It didn't feel very themey.
I think it's the kind of game where the more you play it, the more you know what the cards are, the more you, like somebody says, oh, I punch for five with this. You're like, oh, that's cool. Like, I saw what you did to get there. You know what I mean? No, but when you're first playing it, yeah, of course, you don't know what anybody else is doing. But as you play those heroes, things like that, I don't know, the puzzle, I like puzzly games. I think that's where you and I differ a lot. Is I like those games that you're describing as puzzly, so you don't like them because they're puzzly. I really like them. Like ISS Vanguard is more narrative, but I like, what was the other one called? One that you compared Unsettled. To ISS? Unsettled. Like, I liked Unsettled more because it's more of a puzzle trying to solve it. That's the way I feel when I play Marvel Champions. Like, okay, how do I get out of this situation that I was put in by the AI deck using the hero that I have? And every hero feels very different and every mission feels very different as well. So for me, I love the puzzle that's presented to me by the AI deck or the villain deck and trying to figure out new ways to overcome it.
No, I mean, I like puzzly games. I don't think I gravitate towards puzzly co-op games. I think I'd rather have narrative or Euro, essentially.
Gotcha.
All right. Can you guess what my number one is? Give me a hint. It's not Arnak.
It's not Lost. So Arnak wasn't on your list.
No. No.
That's interesting. Yeah, your number one is War of the Ring.
Oh, yeah. No question. My number one game is War of the Ring. It is my absolute favorite game. I like the mechanisms of the game. I love the narrative of the game. All the cards point to various aspects or things that happen in the story. And by playing them in different ways, you can change the story to fit, you know, the game that you're trying to win. I mean, I have the anniversary edition plus the anniversary edition of the expansions. Plus I bought rings for the Elven Rings and mountains to put on the board and miniatures that I have painted up for the various settlements and everything. Yeah, I got well over $1,000 invested into War of the Ring. And I think it's the best game I've ever played. So that's my number one, War of the Ring. And it's probably Peter's number one, too.
Yeah, no, for sure not. All right. So I'm working on my actual top 10 list.
Revising on the fly?
I'm revising on the fly. Everybody knows my number one. I talk about it all the time. It is the greatest game ever made. It is Gaia Project. It takes
it's not the mind?
It's not the mind. I do have the mind on here. It's at 30 right now. So knock it down to 32. Right above Nations, in fact, speaking to Nations. Yeah, so Gaia Project, fantastic. The best solo Automa that I've ever played with. It's complicated enough that it actually feels like you're playing against the player, but simple enough that it's not taking an hour to figure out what the AI is doing on their turn. Again, the micro turn thing, I love just doing one little action and then having time to think about it while everybody else takes their turn. I love the way the tech track works. There's like five different tech tracks. You know, do you want to be able to build further away, or do you want to be able to get more income, or do you want to be able to get more science so you can move up on all the tracks? Guess what? You want to do all of those things, but you can't. And I love how, and actually a lot of my favorite games, Nucleum, I think that's why Nucleum beats Brass out for me, and Gaia Project also beating these games out. What do they have these turn-to-turn goals? Clans of Caledonia has this too, where it's like you get 5 extra points if you do this turn. So it's like, oh, maybe I should do that this turn. Yeah. Oh, I did it twice, I get 10 extra points. You know, so it makes you kind of build, and you want to look at these things ahead of time too, because it's like, all right, round 3, I need to be able to like build space stations or whatever else it is. So, you know, I like that turn-to-turn, but also the end game goals are different every game. And that's why, even though the actions you can do and the factions you can play with are like the same every game, really you're playing a different game each time, because based on what those end game goals are, based on how the board's laid out and the planets are laid out, in the same way I feel about Nucleum, the board's the same every time, but like there are neutral buildings in different spots and different spots are blocked from game to game. And those goals from round to round are different each game. And they really do. Like, the thing I really hate when Euro games, like, the way they get samey for me is when it's the same thing over and over. And it's like, so the reason games like Feast for Odin, which I really, really like that game, but the reason it didn't make my top list is because I could literally do the same thing every time I play that game. Certainly, there's going to be potentially a little bit of difference in resources or the cards you draw, but like 90% of the stuff you can do can be the same from game to game. And even though I really like it, that does bother me. It like kind of eats away at me a little bit. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll play that game once every 6 months, but Gaia Project, I could play every day for a week and feel like every game is different. I feel like I'm learning new things every time I play it based on the faction I'm playing, based on the board layout, based on the goals. And even though it don't seem that different, it really makes a huge difference in how you have to play, because those 2 points per round you get, like, oh, if I do this 3 times, I get 6 points. Like, missing out on those 6 points is the difference between winning and losing that game. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, those micro actions and those micro goals, I guess I really like that because that's really the big thing in Nucleum and the big thing in Gaia Project, both the same. So I have three games I want to talk about for my also-rans. Honorable mentions, although two of them also are in my top 20.
Or honorable mentions, one or the other.
But why don't you go? Do you have any that you really stand out that you want to mention?
I have five. Well, actually, seven. But
oh my gosh. All right. Well, why don't you go first? Because I can I can throw in one or two more.
All right. So my honorable mentions are Egemonia, which I didn't rank because we just recently started playing it and I haven't quite gotten far enough along, but it has the potential to get up there. Another, I have a group of two games that aren't really sniffing my top 20, but I've always had a blast when I've played them. And that is Fortune and Glory, which Fortune and Glory, it's an old Flying Frog game. The rules are an absolute mess. It is a disaster of a game. And it is a blast. I have a great time playing.
Fun, stupid games. Yes.
Yes. But be warned if you get a copy of it, the rules are a mess. And for much the same reason,
super fun.
Yeah. Thunder Road Vendetta. The rules aren't a mess for that one, but it is just stupid fun. I'm not sure I would put it in my top 20 of board games. It doesn't quite reach that pinnacle, but it's a lot of fun. And then I thought I should include some party-ish games. Or filler games, since none of them were going to make my top 20, but some honorable mentions are Just One.
That's my number 29.
A really good one.
Yeah.
And I put in the Exit / Unlock series of the escape room games. I thought I enjoy those. The game, apparently, I've played more than any other. Can you guess what it is?
Can't Stop.
No. Close. What else have we played?
Similo?
Yes, I felt I'd be remiss if I did not mention the game. I apparently have more log plays than any other, and that is Similo, which is definitely a filler game. Is never going to come close, probably, to my even top 50. But it takes 10 minutes to play, and we close out game nights.
Oh, it's so good
with that one. So, those are my honorable mentions.
Yeah, if you haven't played Similo, get it. You have to get multiple sets because I do think it's not as fun playing with one set. So basically, we've played it. Didn't we play it on TikTok? One of our five videos on TikTok is us playing a game of Similo. I mean, that's how quickly it is. It's like a 30-second clip and you watch a basically full game of Similo.
You watch how quickly Peter can lose at Similo.
Oh, no. We won that round, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So basically you're just playing a card down either horizontally or vertically. And it's a picture. All these cards are pictures of different things. And if it's horizontally, it means it's different than what you're trying to get them to guess. And if it's vertically, it's similar. And the first round, they eliminate one card, then two cards, then three cards, then four cards. Then in the final round, it's a 50-50 chance they eliminate one of the two cards. But it is so much fun. It's so dumb. But like I said, you have to combine sets because it's like doing animals to animals. It's like, okay, that one has fur. People is the worst because it's like, okay, the first person's either a male or a female. Are you doing similar?
Right. Yeah.
Like you get little stuff like that. So I like doing
Guess Who at that point. Like that new game with the flip up things.
It's like, oh, they all have beards, of course. Yeah. But then if somebody's giving you a clue of a cow and you've got to figure out, is it Zeus or Shakespeare, like that is way more fun to me. So I do like mixing and combining the sets in that way where the clue giver is using animals or whatever, and they're trying to guess a person that makes it so much better. Yeah. So that one's a good one as well. So is that all your,
that's all my honorable mentions.
All right. So two of them. Great Western Trail, you talked about. Great game. New Zealand is the best version of that game. That would be number three. That would actually knock Nucleum down.
I can't believe you didn't have that on your list.
I remembered it, and I forgot to add it in. And I'm like, oh, that's not on here. I even remembered that I remembered it, but I didn't remember to actually add it to my list. And then Power Grid, I'm going to put in right above Through the Ages. So Through the Ages would have been knocked down to 10, but now that's down to number 11.
Oh, you knocked it out of the top 10 for Power Grid?
Yeah, Power Grid. I love that game. I love economic games. The little auction you do at the beginning to get different power plants. I love the delicious, I have $57 just figuring out down to the penny, what can I do? And then somebody buys one of the resources you need and that puts you to $58. And it's like, no. What do I do? Yeah, what do I do now? Like I need one extra dollar. I don't know. Maybe if I played it now, I would feel differently about it. It has certainly been several years since I played it, probably 10 years. But that used to be like my favorite game. Just nobody ever wants to play it for whatever reason, but I love Power Grid still. My original number 21, which now is knocked down to number 23. This might be a game you've even forgot existed, but I think this game is fantastic, and it is Tribune.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that
game. I mean, it's exactly. Not my top 20, but it's good.
Yeah, I mean, so it was one of the original, like, it's definitely a deck builder, right? You're drafting cards to put into your hand. I don't even remember 90% of how it's played, but I do remember that. I remember you, like,
you're trying to take control of different factions and get the bonuses for those factions. But yeah, no, it's good.
Yeah, and then you get special powers based on which factions you control. And again, it has those different goals, like from game to game, you're trying to do different things. Because didn't it have like different scoring systems? Like, so the scoring system changed every game. Like if somebody doesn't win outright, which most of the time you're not going to win outright, you go down to the quote unquote tiebreaker, which is like the scoring system for the game.
And it had set collection. And yeah, no, it was a good game.
And you're just picking a space on the board and doing whatever's in that space. And a lot of times, again, it's just adding cards to your hand so you can take control of factions. Just really neat, very clever game, especially for its time. And I'm actually surprised that one isn't on more people's lists and a game that more people don't talk about. But
no, it was out of print for a long time.
Well, it's still out of print, right? Like,
oh, I thought didn't they bring it back as a second edition, like another publisher, and then it kind of disappeared again?
No,
I may be wrong on that.
Yeah,
it was originally published by Fantasy Flight, I think. Wasn't it?
Yes, I have it on my shelf over there somewhere, but yeah. Yeah, so that's another one. My bottom game, my number 35, I guess, which is now number 37, Eclipse. That is a game that I wish was much higher on my list, but there were just
some broken stuff. Yeah, I wish it was a good game too.
No, it's a very good game, but it just it has some issues.
I have not played the second edition.
And I have not played the second edition either. Like, so
the first edition, I bounced hard off that one.
Well, yeah, you had some bad luck the first time you played it with like exploring different solar systems around you. You had some bad luck early, and I think that one just it bounced.
Well, for a game that's as long as it is and for as grand in scope as it is, to have the planet selection when you first start or the planets that appear around you be more difficult than others. I mean, and Twilight Imperium can suffer from the same type of issue, which is why you see a lot of people use standardized setups for that, where the planets go in certain areas to try to balance that out. But that didn't go over well for me. Plus the missile problem in the first edition, I didn't like.
Right.
But anyway, but the whole economic moving of the cubes and stuff, I did think that was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the gameplay itself. See, I don't know. It's funny because I forgive certain sins in some games and not in others. So I guess it's a little hypocritical of me. But like the mechanics in that and like the way you built your ships was so freaking cool. And like the economy of like you put your little discs on the board, but that also makes your upkeep every round more expensive. So you're getting more resources, but you're getting less money. Like all those neat decisions were so cool that I could forgive some balance issues or some whatever issues like in the game, because all of that stuff was so neat. I think the missile thing was one thing that did bother me because it was such an obvious thing. The first time I played it, I'm like, wait a minute, these seem broken. And they certainly were. I was like, why don't these cost energy? Like everything else does. But anyway, I don't even know the way they fixed it. I know they did fix it, but it's just kind of weird like that they never nerfed the missiles themselves. They just did other things.
They did something in the expansion to have like an anti-missile thing or something,
But then you have to get that tech out.
Second edition did something about it, but I haven't played it.
Yeah. But then you have to get a tech out, right? Like, I don't know.
Exactly. That's just weird. Exactly.
I think like, okay, to counter your tech, I got to get my own tech that does nothing else except for counter your tech. Like, that doesn't seem to make sense to me. Yeah. I mean, I wish they just would have nerfed the missiles. Like, that would have been a way easier solution. But anyway, yeah. So that's our top 20. So yeah, I will put together mine in a list. So come join us on the Discord and I will put together my list there in the podcast notes. So I will list them 1 to 20 with Great Western Trail and Power Grid in there. And I guess I'll go down to 21 or 22 or whatever, just so you have the original games in there as well.
I'm not altering my list. I'm sticking with it.
I mean, I'd stick with it if I wasn't a moron.
I can't believe you forgot Great Western Trail. That's...
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that was literally like my number 3 of all time. So like, that's pretty bad when you forget your third favorite game of all time.
Yeah.
Only I could do that, by the way. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us on this little bit longer edition. I'm glad you stuck with us, and we will see you in 2 weeks, where we will probably talk about what game were Wormspan or something like that. Probably be Wormspan. I think there was another one we were talking about doing. I don't remember, but come back in 2 weeks and find out.
There'll be a game.
It'll be a game. It'll be something we're talking about. All right. Oh, what's the game we're playing? Did we review that one yet?
Agamonia.
Agamonia. Yeah, we haven't reviewed that one. So it might be Agamonia, it might be Wormspan. One of those two. Seven Citadel just came out too. So yeah.
Who knows? Oh yeah, I got that right on my table. I have to break that out. I'll look at
all the games. Hey, we're gonna save that story for another day. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us and we'll see you soon.
All right.
Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks for joining us again for the One Stop Co-op Shop podcast. Check out our YouTube channel at One Stop Co-op Shop. Also, join us for games and discussion on our Discord channel. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/onestop or leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another top 5 list.
Hey, Jerry.
What, Peter?
I have a list of top 20 friends.
I'm not on it.
I forgot to add you.
Yeah, no, not surprised. I'll be the insert number 3, like Great Western Trail.